a member of the committee from the Northern Cape.
Morning, Chair. Good morning to everybody. My name is Dennis Lu, and I'm from the Free State. Everybody knows where the Free State is.
Morning, everybody. I'm Rosima Kasana Manzini from Mpumalanga, where the sun arises.
Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm Gigi Gosnell. I'm the head of the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, DGs. My name is Wilson Makalin Church, a set up to the National House of Traditional Youth.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Shoki Mohaladi, Office of the DG Traditional Affairs.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Ken Terry. I'm the head of the National Disaster Management Center.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Themba Fosi. I'm the Deputy Director General, responsible for policy research and knowledge management, also acting as a DDG for infrastructure and economic development.
Very good morning, honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Chanel Madrid. I'm a Deputy Director General in the Department of Cooperative Governance, looking after provincial and municipal government support.
Good morning, Peter LaGrange, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, honourable members and government officials. My name is Moss Manel, and you can ask about it.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ngosana Mfuku. I'm the content advisor for the government.
Good morning, honourable members. Delegation from the National. My name is Lando Mashani. I am in the research component. Hello.
Thank you very much. Once more, you're welcome. And the department came in full. They are here two DGs in the subcommittee. You're welcome. And this is members of the committee representing the House. I will allow the two chiefs to lead us whatever way you have placed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I wanted to start by tendering an apology for the Minister. They have got a GNA meeting, as you can imagine, completely with us. My colleague here and I will indicate, you know, how we are going to have the presentations on.
Thank you very much, Tishy, and thank you very much, Chairperson of the Committee and honourable members. We will be presenting our annual performance plan for financial year 2013-2014. In the course of it, we will also take the opportunity to reflect on the progress we've made towards the overall objective of government in this particular.
presentation will be divided into two parts. The first part will focus on the programs, and the Chief Operations Officer of the Department of Cooperative Governance, Dr. Lydia Sebeko, will walk us through the park. Once that is done, then the Chief Finance Officer of the department will also speak to the financial components of the budget elsewhere. And then we will conclude the presentation and then allow members to interact with the presentation. With your permission, if I could ask Dr. Sebeko to give us the presentation.
Thank you very much, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I see we don't have a projector, so we're going to rely on the hard copies. Two copies have been distributed to you, just to explain so there is no confusion. The copy that was just distributed to you now is the one that just contains the annual performance plan. DG alludes to the fact that we would also reflect on how we have performed in the previous financial year. So we're going to use the one that you've been having all the time, the one which has got progress as well, the thick one. First of all, I'm now on slide two. It is just the outline of the presentation, and as DG has said, I'm dealing with part one. In terms of the next slide, the purpose of this presentation is to present to the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs the department's overview and also to present progress made in the previous financial year, as well as the CFO will be doing to present the NTF allocation that supports the implementation of the planned work for the department. The departmental mandate is derived from Chapter 3, 5, 6, 7, 9, and 13 of the Constitution, as honorable members are aware. And our primary mandate, firstly, is to develop and monitor the implementation of national policy and legislation, seeking to transform and strengthen key institutions and mechanisms of government to fulfill their developmental role. To develop, promote, and monitor mechanisms, systems, and structures to enable an integrated service delivery and implementation within government, and to promote sustainable development by providing support to and exercising oversight over provincial and local government. In terms of the vision, as the Department of Cooperative Governance, we strive to build an effective, efficient, responsive, and developmental local government that will be the foundation for improved and accelerated the delivery of services to the community. Our vision, therefore, in short, is a responsive, accountable, effective, and efficient system of cooperative governance. This vision, as honorable members would see, is aligned to the delivery agreement outcome 9. In terms of our mission statement, our mission is to facilitate cooperative governance throughout all spheres of government in order to build a capable state that fulfills its developmental role through the following. First, the development of appropriate policies, integrated programs and regulatory mechanisms, the promotion of service delivery support through enabling mechanisms and intergovernmental relations, achievement of social cohesion through the creation of enabling mechanisms for communities to participate in governance, and to monitoring and evaluating the implementation of cooperative governance policies and programs. Our values, guided by the principles of Batopili, are professionalism and integrity, goal orientation, participation and collectivism, and innovation and service excellence. The strategic goals and of the department besides being derived from its vision and mission, it's also linked to other government plans, and the next slide, which is slide number 8, shows the extent to which this has been done. We have got 8 goals which we will be implementing over the MTF. The first one being to facilitate the implementation of a policy framework that provides for a differentiated approach to municipal financing, planning, and support. This is aligned to output one of outcome nine. And the next one, goal number two, I'm not going to read everything word for word. I'm just making indications of the alignment. Goal two is that to facilitate improved access to basic services and sustainable infrastructure development. And this is aligned to local government turnaround strategy priority number four, as well as priority number five. But it's also aligned to output two of outcome nine. The third goal is to facilitate implementation of a community work program and sustainable economic development at a local level, and this is aligned to output three of outcome nine, the implementation of what we call CWP. Goal four is the strengthening the effectiveness of cooperative governance through the development and rollout of policies and legislation. Goal five, strengthening measures of to fight corruption and unethical conduct, and of course that is also linked to the third objectives of LG task. Goal six, strengthen, coordinate, and support effective integrated disaster management and services. Goal seven, deepen participation participatory democracy through a refined ward committee model. The alignment goes back to outcome nine as well. The last goal is the administrative and financial capabilities of municipalities are enhanced. That speaks to both the LG task as well as outcome nine. In terms of our performance progress from in the past financial year 2012-18, the slides that follows will be showing this progress per program. But in as you see on slide number 10, the summary performance shows that 75% of the projects that were planned were achieved, and that 20% were partially achieved. When we say that projects are partially achieved, we mean that work was done, but not to the conclusion of you did not finish what you were going to do. You are still continuing to do it in the current financial year. And 5% of the projects were not achieved. That therefore would constitute naturally the carry through to the current financial year. The next table gives an indication of where these percentages as on the pie chart are located in terms of the programs of the department. So the slide number 11 is actually an elaboration of slide number 10 by way of showing where those projects that were achieved, partially achieved and not achieved are located within the program. Now, if we take program by program, starting with the first program, which is called administration, just by way of highlight, slide number 13 gives an indication of the highlights of the performance in this program. For an example, all the governance structures have been established and are functional. This includes the budget committee, the internal audit steering committee, external audit committees, and the supply chain management committee. The annual report was and the annual performance plan were done and submitted on time. The most of the as you would have seen on slide number 11, most of the projects that were planned for this program were actually achieved in the financial year. The analysis, our analysis in terms of this program, is that the main conclusion that we can draw from this from the analysis is that efforts in improving internal governance processes and systems are really contributing vastly towards the achievement of unqualified audit, mainly because of our commitment implementing the follow-through and reporting on progress against the post-audit action plan. However, although there is some progress with regard to the finalization of the organizational structure, we are not able to meet the target of having an approved organizational structure by the end of the financial year. Now, for this program, out of the 8 strategic goals that we have just looked at, this program draws out 8 strategic objectives. The first one being to provide effective internal financial management to cooperative governance and traditional affairs by maintaining sound internal controls and implementing the annual post-audit action plan by the 31st March 2014. This is what this program is going to be doing in the current financial year, as well as providing human resources services that respond to the needs of the department, and strengthening the ICT and knowledge management capacity to support the key objectives of the department, conducting research to inform policies aimed at strengthening the system of provincial and local government, strengthening monitoring and evaluation across the 3 spheres of government, as well as improving the strategic management and governance processes through the implementation of the annual audit plan, the annual risk management plan, and the annual fraud prevention plan. In order to achieve the strategic objectives that are identified here, the department through this program will be implementing the following projects. I'm not sure, Honorable Chair, in the interest of time, whether I should read the projects or just point to the projects. Thank you very much. So the projects are listed on slide number 15. Our second program is called Policy Research and Knowledge Management. And in terms of the past financial year, this program has achieved almost all the projects that they had planned for the year, which includes, amongst others, the implementation of the Knowledge Management Initiative, the policy research that was commissioned by other programs in other in areas of municipal finance management and audit outcomes of municipalities, research reports on service delivery process that were conducted on a monthly basis, the project on the development of a robust and reliable ICT infrastructure at local government level. The was achieved at the end of the financial year, despite the project manager having not been there, especially insofar as its initiation is concerned. For the coming financial year, this program will continue to conduct research and as well as to facilitate the implementation of policy and legislation, and the projects that they have planned to achieve those objectives are outlined on slide number 19. The third program is governance and intergovernmental relations. And for the year 2012-13, this program has got the following highlights. One, the draft framework for the assignment of powers and functions across government was revised. This project will be achieved at the end of the financial year through initiatives aimed at improving the functionality of district IGR structures. We managed to revise the assessment report on the functionality of district IGR structures, and the implementation of the recommendation of that research will be done in 2013-14. The monitoring support and interventions bill was revised with the aim of contributing towards strengthening oversight roles and the management of interventions between the 3 spheres. Out of the 6 targeted provinces, 5 provinces, namely Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal, were supported to develop provincial frameworks on out-of-pocket expenses for ward committees. And 32 municipalities in Mpumalanga and KZN provinces are currently implementing based on the framework. The remaining 1 province will be supported in the next coming financial year. The further projects that were implemented in 2012-13 financial year include the ward committee, the capacitation of the ward committee members, and the training thereof was rolled out through local government sector at local government center, and as well as the facilitation of development of ward level operational plans, and the support to provinces to implement the credit control and debt collection policy guidelines. Honorable members are aware that this is one of the sticky issues in terms of revenue enhancement in municipalities. A draft report on the assessment of municipal rating policies and compliance with regulations on ratios of the 24 municipalities was developed. The draft Municipal Property Rates Amendments Bill was finalized and submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. 92 municipalities across all provinces were supported to better manage spending on municipal infrastructure grant MIG. Further on, the facilitation of establishment of about 250 of the 238 Municipal Public Accounts Committees was done, as well as the partnerships established with the Free State Provincial Department and the Hawks Special Investigation Unit to deal with our objective of accelerating a fight against corruption. Their strategic objectives of this program include the strengthening of functionality of ward committees and enhancement of community participation, improvement of audit outcomes of municipalities, the implementation of initiatives to improve financial management, expenditure and revenue enhancement, facilitation of the implementation of policy and legislation to strengthen cooperative governance across the three spheres of government, as well as strengthening the anti-corruption mechanisms and interventions. The next program is National Disaster Management. Our National Disaster Management Center in the past financial year has achieved the following, just by way of a few highlights. In terms of strengthening accountability and reporting on disaster management across the spheres and sectors of government, we managed to develop a draft disaster management amendment bill. And we also developed a national disaster management education and training framework aimed at improving the system of disaster management through education and training. We also finalized a discussion paper on fire services and was published on the 18th of May 2013. The draft regulations on disaster response declaration and classification were finalized and are being prepared for public comments. Flood risk and vulnerability profiles was finalized and thereafter calculated on a national scale. A reprioritization was completed in the last quarter due to resources, data and stakeholder engagement constraints. The priorities for the current financial year include, amongst others, within the objective of strengthening and coordinating support and supporting effective integrated disaster management and fire services by the end of the NDF, the NDMC plans to develop and review the following legislation: the draft white paper on fire brigade services legislation, the disaster management amendment bill. The work has already started in these, and they will be finalizing this. They will also do an indicative risk and vulnerability profile to drought to be developed. The disaster management monitoring and evaluation framework will also be developed, and the center will also develop and implement a national disaster management public awareness plan aimed at capacitating communities and other stakeholders. Our fifth program, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the provincial and municipal government support. Just by way of highlight, this program has achieved, amongst others, the following. The performance of our public entities, namely the South African Local Government Association, SALGA, the South African Cities Network, and Municipal Demarcation Board, is being monitored. On a quarterly basis, they submit reports, and a draft annual report of SALGA and the MDB has been developed. Although the help that we had through the GTZ funding was withdrawn, much work has been done in the area of support to the entities, notwithstanding that withdrawal. We have finalized an assessment report on the impact of fixed-term contracts of municipal managers on municipal councils, aimed to determine the impact of the 5-year fixed-term contract of municipal managers. The recruitment and retention strategy tools have been developed. The target of supporting 70 municipalities to develop technical skills was achieved. The Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency is dealing with the technical skills, while the DCOC through this branch is dealing with skills and critical skills. The list continues in terms of the what was achieved by this, as indicated on slide number 31 and 32. And the strategic objectives that we will be that this program deals with are the differentiated approach to municipal planning, the legislation on governance of different entities, and that will be reviewed in the financial year. The legislation framework to improve institutional and administrative capacity of municipalities to promote corporate governance for associated institutions will be strengthened. The performance and professionalism of municipalities will be enhanced, and national and provincial oversight on implementation of local government legislation will also be the performance thereof will also be improved. We also looking forward to building effective, responsive, and accountable local government through the support that this program will be offering to both municipal local government and provincial government. There are specific projects as listed on slide number 34, through which these strategic objectives will be achieved. The next and the last program that we have is the infrastructure and economic development. And in terms of the past financial year, this program was responsible for the community work program, and this program has been put well on track. We managed to support around 140 municipalities to implement CWP in at least two or three. To date, 139,778 of the planned 171,500 work opportunities have been created. Through initiatives to promote economic development, we are able to support the development of Ingangala Business Development Forum, West Coast District Development Forum, and the Sidibeng United Business Forum. We were able to facilitate the signing of memorandums of understanding on business adopt municipalities with Santam, Eskom, Rand Water Foundations, and Mercedes-Benz. We also signed an agreement with the Department of Trade and Industry to support the development of cooperatives in our municipalities. The performance continues in slide number 32 and 33, but I would like us to get to what this program will be doing for the current financial year 2013-14. The objectives include, amongst others, to ensure the provision and maintenance of about 332,500 work opportunities through CWP, to increase access to basic services, to improve the delivery of free basic services to households by supporting 50 municipalities in the rollout of the National Indigenous Policy for free basic services, to promote greater ownership of environmental health outcomes within municipalities by coordinating the rollout of clean communities program in 8 sites, promote economic development within local government by supporting 25 municipalities to implement economic development programs over the MTF. Further priorities, these priorities will be done through, delivered on through a number of projects, and these projects are listed on slide number 41. Honourable Chair, I would like to draw the attention of the committee to firstly the very first slide where we gave an indication of the fact that there were projects that we planned in 2012-13 that we could not deliver on, that were not achieved. There were also projects that we have planned in 2012-13 that we started delivering on that we did not complete. And these projects are not abandoned. And we are here on slide 42 showing that these projects will be carried through in 2013-14 so that we do implement them. With your permission, Chair, I would not necessarily name them one by one, but just indicate that this slide shows that the projects that were not delivered are not abandoned. We are going on with them in the current financial year. Chair, if that meets with your favorable consideration, then my part of the presentation will end there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We go through budget so that we have one discussion.
Chair, I wanted to request that perhaps we take the Department of Traditional Affairs presentation budget as one, so that when the budget is presented, we would have presented the program. Mr. Mkhalali is going to present, to take us through the presentation.
My presentation is going to start with the progress report, and thereafter then I'll go to the 2013-14 ATP. And the progress report is gives progress regarding the targets that we set for ourselves in 2012-18 financial year. The first target that we have set for ourselves was the compliance report on the implementation of the Traditional Leadership Governance and Framework Act. The comprehensive desktop analysis of the Framework Act, which serves as a basis for the assessment of provincial legislation, has been completed. And a similar analysis was also completed in respect of the National Health Act. This report is a report of compliance alignment between the provincial legislation and the national legislation. And we have been able to finalize this project in the Eastern Cape Province, in the Free State, in Gauteng, in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest. The legislation of KZN has not been considered due to the fact that the province has drafted a new bill, which is currently being considered by the province. That is why we could not do we could not check the compliance or the alignment between their provincial legislation and the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act. The second project was the Gazette on the Formula and Compliance Report on the Establishment of the Kingship and the Queenship Council. In that regard, we are able to draft a formula, and the formula is currently being consolidated, and it is also being considered by the ministerial task team on the tools of trade for traditional leadership. After the ministerial task team has completed that task, then it will be consulted upon with all the kings and the queens. The second project we had in 2013-14 was the regulations on the roles and functions of kings and queens, which we were to develop it. And the draft regulations on the roles and functions of kings and queens have been developed. The draft regulations are being considered also by the ministerial task team on the tools of trade for traditional leaders. The second project is the policy on male initiation. The draft policy on male initiation was developed and submitted to cabinet,
and Cabinet has approved the draft National Policy on Male Initiation, and it also directed that it must be consulted with the relevant role players, and after that it must be resubmitted to the Cabinet Committee on Governance and Administration. The fifth project for 2013-14 was the National Traditional Affairs Bill, published in the Government Gazette for public comments and submitted to Cabinet for approval. The bill has been drafted. There's been extensive pre-Cabinet consultations on the bill, and the bill has also been certified by the state law advisors to support parliamentary processes, and it was found by the state law advisors to be constitutionally compliant. The bill is now in the stage of entering parliamentary processes. Another target was the research report on the analysis of headmanship and headwomanship leadership positions, and the developmental role, research report on the developmental role of traditional leaders. This project, if I may just give why we had a project, is because of the mushrooming of the headmen and headwomen in province. In that regard, regarding this, we have been able to draft a research report with an analysis on the headmen and headwomanship position, including their recognition and confirmation. And also, we have been able to develop a research report on the developmental role of traditional leaders. Another project was the draft traditional affairs strategy. The strategy has been developed, and it is aimed at improving and strengthening coordination of intra and inter-sphere coordination of traditional affairs matters across the three spheres of government. The eighth project, we had traditional leadership institution empowered through training and linkages to other resources. The project has been achieved, and those are the details. In collaboration with the services CETA, we were able to coordinate training on the application of HIV and AIDS in the sector or workplace for officials in the houses of traditional leadership in the Eastern Cape, Free State, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. And we also coordinated training on indigenous law and customary law in the Free State province. The program is designed to empower traditional leaders and their officials with knowledge of various aspects of customary-related legislation, which impacts on the functions, on traditional leadership functions. We also have facilitated training on marine resource and fisheries for 29 traditional leaders and officials, and it took place in the Northern Cape. The training program was presented by Rhodes University in conjunction with the local government CETA. The aim was to develop capacity of traditional leaders with regards to development of marine resources and to create sustainable economic development along the coastline by exploring resources in line with the national development objectives. We also coordinated two awareness programs in water and sanitation, where we trained 133 traditional leaders. In terms of the project on partnership framework approved, the partnership framework was developed and it was approved. The framework, it seeks to address the development, establishment, and sustenance of the collaborative and cohesive relations between various partners within traditional affairs. As some of you may know, that in traditional communities, for instance, the mining communities, where you find that there are partnerships between the traditional leaders and the private sector. So that is the project that tries to give guidelines regarding establishment of the partnerships. And then we have report on the implementation of the recommendations of the assessment of the state of governance of traditional leadership structures. The department conducted the assessment in 2011-12. and we are reporting on the implementation of the findings of that assessment. And in that regard, we have developed an empowerment program to implement the recommendation of that report. And in order to implement the program, we have also established the National Implementation Forum, which is constituted of the Department of Traditional Affairs and also the Provincial Departments of Traditional Affairs, as well as sector departments and entities, traditional affairs entities. And the other project which we planned was to support the National House. It has been supported, the National House, regarding finances, administratively, just been supported. And we also supported the cultural events. We also supported the reconstitution of the traditional council in some of the provinces, and also the opening of the house. Regarding the traditional leadership disputes and claims, we have set ourselves a target that we will finalize 300 traditional leadership disputes and claims. And we were able to finalize 249 traditional leadership disputes and claims. In addition, we established 5 provincial traditional leadership disputes and claims in Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, KZN, Northwest, and Limpopo. And the breakdown of the disputes and claims which were finalized per province, they are there in page 5. From Mpumalanga, we finalized 41 disputes and claims. Limpopo, 72 disputes and claims. Eastern Cape, we finalized 42. Northwest, 25. KZN, 44. And then the National Commission on Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims finalized 19. The other provinces, those are the disputes and claims which were finalized by the provincial committee on traditional leadership disciplines. So that will be the end of the report for the 2012-13 financial year. Then I'll move to our 2013-14 APP. Our vision, it starts in page 7. Our vision is the integrated traditional affairs for sustainable development and social cohesion. And the mission, to coordinate traditional affairs activities across government through the development of appropriate policies, norms and standards, systems and regulatory framework governing traditional affairs, to provide support to traditional affairs, enhancement of information and knowledge management on traditional affairs matters, and the promotion of culture, heritage and social cohesion. The last bullet on the mission statement is focusing on the heritage culture of traditional Khoi and San communities. In page 8, there we are outlining our goal statements and aligning them to the strategic objectives. The first goal statement, we have empowered institution of traditional leadership. The strategic objectives for that goal is to enhance knowledge management within traditional affairs, to enhance alignment and standardization in the regulatory, institutional and support frameworks for traditional affairs across provinces and municipalities, and to ensure that the institution of traditional leadership is empowered by reviewing and developing the empowerment program. The next goal statement is an efficient and effective Department of Traditional Affairs. Strategic objective, to accelerate the establishment of the GTA corporate and financial services, and to establish effective governance systems for the department. The third goal statement is an effective and efficient governance system for structures of traditional affairs and enhanced capacity and capability.
If you could just go to the identified priorities.
Okay. Okay. From page 8. Yes. Page 9. Okay. Okay, in page 8, we are just indicating the government programs and priorities which we aligned our APP with. and we have 13 priorities. The first priority for 2013-14 is implementation of the Traditional Leadership Outreach Development Program for structures within the Institution of Traditional Leadership. And then we have implementation of the empowerment program informed by the outcomes of the assessment project. I've already indicated that we had the assessment project. So from that assessment project, we had a program of action. So we will be implementing projects from the program of action for the assessment project. And among those projects, we will be developing and implementing a bursary policy for needy children. There, I think we speak for needy children in traditional communities, including children of traditional leaders, if they fall under the criteria that will be developed for those who will qualify for the bursary. And then we'll also implement the outreach or empowerment training program for traditional leaders on the legislation impacting on the Institution of Traditional Leadership and government programs. And we will profile 78 traditional councils in support of the local government turnaround strategy priorities. These are the traditional councils that are within the municipalities that are targeted for LGTAS or prioritized for LGTAS. And then the next priority, it will be providing support to provinces to align their provincial legislation with the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act, and we will be expediting and processing the remaining traditional leadership issues and claims. Another priority is to strengthen the interfaith sector and to establish the provincial interfaith chapter. The next one is promoting and supporting tourism, especially cultural tourism. This will be within the traditional, the Khoi and the San communities. And we will finalize the protocol guidelines for kinship, queenship, and study the second phase focusing on senior traditional leaders in 2013-14. In 2012-18, we developed the guidelines for kinship and queenship. So in 2013-14, we moved to the next level of traditional leadership, which is the senior traditional leadership. And then we'll also consult on the norms and standards on tools of trade for the Institution of Traditional Leadership. We will consult on the norms and standards for the tools of trade for the Institution of Traditional Leadership in order to address the inconsistencies that has been identified across provinces regarding benefits and provision of tools of trade and support to the institution. And then the next priority is to develop and consult on the appropriate norms and standards for recognition and appointment of headmen and headwomen. I've already indicated that the mushrooming of headmen and headwomen, so we'll be developing norms and standards to give guidelines regarding the appointment of headmen and headwomen. Then we'll be coordinating summits, roundtable discussions, cultural events to promote heritage within and social cohesion within traditional Khoi and San communities. And we will finalize the second phase of the establishment of the department by focusing on the filling of positions of the corporate and financial services and also strengthening our government system. The last priority is to develop and implement a monitoring and evaluation framework to strengthen our government system. I then move to the target that address those priorities. And we have identified two flagship projects, the first one being the Traditional Leadership Outreach Development Program, which is aimed at empowering all the legally recognized traditional leadership structures on the policies, legislation that impact on the institution of traditional leadership. Then the next target, we have implementation of the findings of the assessment report, and we will continue with the implementation of the empowerment program, as I indicated earlier. Then we have the third target of profiling of traditional councils, which I've also indicated in the priorities. There are those traditional councils that are within the LGCAS prioritized municipality. And then we will provide support. I'm not giving the details there. And then I'll provide, we also have a target on providing support to provinces in respect of the reconstitution of traditional councils. We started that process in 2012-13. We will continue the process in 2013-14. Then we will also conduct research on the status of community authorities and independent headmen, headwomen. In terms of the transitional or the issue of community authorities and independent headmen, headwomen, arise from the previous regime where there were traditional leaders who were wrongfully appointed during the apartheid government. And in terms of the transitional arrangement in the Framework Act, these community authorities should have been disestablished. However, they still exist. So we will embark on a project where we then start taking stock of how many are these cases and in which provinces we find them. Then we have another target of 360 traditional leadership districts and claims finalized. And those are the targets that we have set for ourselves. Then the next target, we have identification of cultural and heritage tourist attraction sites within traditional Khoi and San communities. We also have the engagement with interfaith sector to promote moral regeneration and social cohesion. We also have another target of finalization of the protocol guidelines for kinship queenship, starting with the second phase focusing on gathering information for protocols of traditional leadership. The 10th target, we have the partnership framework implemented in 8 provinces. I indicated that in 2012-13, we developed the framework, so this year we'll focus on implementing the partnership framework. The 11th target, we have implementation of the capacity building implementation plan, which is from the program of action of the assessment project. The 12th target, we have gathering of information on landless traditional leaders. During the assessment, we identified that there are landless traditional leaders, so we will continue with gathering information on the landless traditional leaders, where they are, who they are, and so on. And the 13th target is coordination of summits and roundtable discussions, and to promote heritage within traditional leadership and Khoi and San communities. The 14th target will develop a corporate governance framework to strengthen our governance system. And we will also develop a service delivery improvement plan and service charter as a new department to improve our services and also for people to know the services that we provide. And then the 16th one is the development and implementation of the MNE framework. And that will be my turn.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'll start with the TG. I will go through by the subset that we have. CFO to present something. I think you can take it.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, DG. I'll be presenting the budget allocation now, but let me start with the housekeeping issues. that though there are two departments, that is Department of Cooperative Governance and the Department of Traditional Affairs, but in terms of budget structure, we are still one vote, which is vote three. The Department of Traditional Affairs forms part of the programs of the department, but only as it relates to budget. The functionality is functioning on its own, it's got its own accounting officer and its own staff. As the committee may be aware that we also have MISA as our governance component. As for this year, MISA will be transferring funds to them once they comply with all the requirements of Section 38C of PFMA. Once that is done, then we'll be starting transferring the funds to them, but they are operating on their own, they have got their own offices. But in terms of budget allocation, they are part of our transfer payments. Okay, so in terms of presentation, there are two documents that I'll be talking to. One is a summarized presentation, looks like this. The other one is a detailed Word document, which I will give my old friend, Mr. Mahlangeni, who are doing research, to the system, which gives you our expenditure trends from the previous financial years and the MTF cycle. And that one, I'm not going to go through it, but it gives you the background of where we come from and where we're going to. I'll only concentrate on the summarized presentation. Chairperson, the first slide deals with the budget process itself as it started in August last year until we got an allocation letter in slide 45. In terms of money. Let me use this one. No, I'm not the oldest. Yeah, this could be slide 45.
Are we together, Mr. Mahlangeni?
You still look young. I last saw you in 1983. Chairperson, as I said, the ENE document was signed on the 11th of February, and the slide 46 deals with the nitty-gritty of the allocations. I'll start with the additional funding that we received as the two departments. In terms of compensation of employees, we received 4.8 million. And MISA, on top of what they received additional funding of 60 million. The challenge with the Department of Traditional Affairs is the budget adequacy and to enable them to operate fully. As we speak now, there's still some arrangement between the two departments. For instance, I work for the two departments as a chief financial officer. We want to strengthen their capacity in terms of corporate services and finance, as my colleague was saying in her presentation. But what we requested for allocation of to address that was not adequate. We only received 2 million. It was the 3 million. The 2 million was through prioritization process. So it's still not enough, and we're still pleading with National Treasury to assist this department so that it can be on its own. We also received additional funding when it comes to local government equitable share in the MTF cycle, 651 million, which is a lot of money, and that year is 4.5 million. And it's something that the committee must take note of, that whereas Treasury is moving away from this budget where the goods and services are being decreased on a yearly basis, but when it comes to local government provisions, we're going to see that there's lots of increases that are happening there. But linked to those additional funding, there were also mandatory savings, which were decided by the Minicom budget, which all departments were required to comply with. The first year it was, that is this financial year 1%, the next financial year 2%, and that year 3%. It cuts across and is something that all of us had to adhere to. And the next slide deals with that. The monies that the department will have lost through that process, with cooperative governance, goods and services, reprioritization savings, even the entities that report to us, like the commission board, they lost about 426,000, the SALGA, 266. But the major loss that we reported, and as I said, this decision was taken by Minicom budget, is that our community work program, we lost 1 billion through the MTF cycle, starting with 310 million in the first financial year, that is this year. And this is a major loss which the department was still looking at it as to how it can persuade Treasurer to give us back this money, because it has a negative impact in terms of our projected participants that we wanted to carry through and employ in the following years. But as we speak now, that money is no longer with us. And there are also adjustments that were made to the baselines, as I said, in terms of the municipal disaster grant. We lost about 3.5 million, but the major loss here was on MIG, as the committee will recall that we have some challenges in terms of the municipalities spending the grants that are allocated to them, all of them, including MIG, including housing grants are coming from other departments. And the view from treasurers that these grants should be, there should be some reductions that are made, even though we're protesting as a department, that these mandatory savings must not apply to local government allocations. But it happened, and those reductions were made. As I said, the major one happened to be the MIG grant. It lost about 291 million, and the next financial is 1.2 billion. Is a lot of money, but it's also around the money that they are not spending on a yearly basis, because last year we reported to this committee that they didn't spend about 2 billion of their MIG allocation. And when we come and present the financial results of the past financial year, we see in our department that about 1.1 billion has been withheld or offset by National Treasury from the equity of the share of municipalities, which, as I said, is also having a negative impact. But it is a result of the municipalities not spending the conditional grants that are allocated to them. And one of the conditions is, if you don't spend money allocated you from the fiscus, you must return it back to the fiscus at the end of the financial year. But the problem with the municipalities is they don't spend money, but the money does not remain in the bank account. When you go there, when there's no money, but the money has not been spent for what it was allocated for. And as a result of that, Treasury then takes, together with us as a department, decision that this money must recover from the equity share. And that's what we are doing every year. We have done this year is amounting to 1.1 billion that we didn't transfer from the equity share. Chairperson, slide 47. Is the total allocation the program. We have seven programs in the department, including traditional affairs as program number seven. We have been as a total allocated 58.252 billion for the current financial year out of 54.855 from previous adjusted allocation from the previous financial year, which amounts to about 3.3 billion increase, which is a nominal percentage of 6%. If I may start with the first one, administration, we have been allocated this financial year 280 million from 197. And these increases generally are to do with the inflation and the compensation of employees.
said earlier that we have serious challenges both to departments in terms of compensation of employees. We don't have enough budget to appoint the people that we would like to have to make us able to follow the rent as we expected. If we are having allocated 58 billion of that, 57 billion is transferred to municipalities. We need to follow that money to make sure that it gets spent for the purposes for which it was transferred for. And also to assist the municipality that I spoke about in terms of their expenditure capabilities. But with this kind of money that we get allocated and is there already, it's not enough for us to continue doing that the way we would like to do it, though we try by all means to try to do that. So administration, all the increases that you see there, you only when you come to program number 3, where there is a conditional grant, and you see that this last financial year was 38 billion, this year is 40, because of the equity of the share is sitting there in that program. That's why you see that increase. But when you come to departmental allocation, there is no increase. Look at disaster, the bigger allocation is the grant that is rapid response grant that we get allocated every year. That's what is making up the bigger allocation of that. PMGS is also, there is a grant sitting there for about 200 million. Infrastructure and economic development, the MIG is sitting in that. We can look at threads, the chairperson started with 56 million, is sitting at 105 million. And I think my colleague there, as she was doing the allocation, I was looking at this allocation, it's still not enough for them to undertake the projects that they want to do as a department, as a fully fledged government department. The allocations on slide number 46 are per economic classification. Compensation of employees is only about, and it's inclusive of everybody, only about 8 million increase, which is not enough to address. If you take into account that the salary increases are there, I mean, to appoint new people is a very, very, very difficult exercise for the department to undertake as we speak now. And as we have spoken about goods and services, we have 1.8 billion or 2.1 this financial year. That is not goods and services for us. It's actually money allocated to CDMP, which amounts to 1.6 billion, which is money that we pay directly to the lead agencies who are responsible for the implementation of this program. You will see how much is left for the COC on the last slide in terms of us doing the administration. Capital assets, those assets are mainly the vehicles that we buy, furniture and related matters. The last one before the last slide is transfers and subsidies and the new baselines that have been allocated. Just to give the committee some indication of how much are we talking about in terms of all these major, we can call them projects, but allocations in the department. They amount to 57 billion out of a 58 billion allocation. MIG will be given 14 billion this year. MSIG, which you give it to all municipalities, is for them to improve their administrative capacities by computers and all those systems, internal systems. The grant that I spoke about, the disaster grant, 534. Equity of the share last year, last financial year was 38 billion, this year it's 40 billion. So it's as I said, that Treasury is looking, the government is really looking after the municipalities, is assisting them. Next day is 44 billion, that's 50 billion. So the increases are good, but still remains as to whether these monies that we give to municipalities are effectively utilized, and it's still our responsibility to make sure that gets done. CWP 1.6, MISA 262 million, last 896 million, so it has moved. SALGA, MDB, CRA, South African Cities Network, UCLGA 55.3, Commission for Disputed Claims. So these, they have, they are nominal increases. They have, though they were decreased in terms of the statutory reductions, but as we move on, traditional affairs, this is their goods and services and personnel. 44, as I was saying, is not enough, and we need the assistance of this committee to actually also speak on our behalf that this department should be fully funded. The total of those, all those major allocations is 57.8 billion, and we are left with 452 million, which is the operational budget for DECOG. I just want to emphasize this is, if you take the percentage, it's 0.8% of the total allocation, and this is the money that you are expected as a department to manage and follow up on these allocations and make sure that the recipients, which are our municipalities and the provinces, do what is expected of them. But with this kind of money, about 200,000 of this is salaries, and it's to pay actually the people who are currently employed, the hot bodies that are there, or warm bodies that are there. I mean, when it comes to us, we did, I must say, request additional funding from Treasury, but because of these competing needs, and I think also Treasury, fortunately our minister said that the Minicom part took a decision which is part of the allocation data conditions that we are expected as departments to reduce our personnel by 1% every year starting from this financial year. We don't know how we're going to do that, but it's a requirement or expectation from Treasury that we need to do that, notwithstanding the fact that we, as the two departments, we are not fully capacitated to do our mandate. But I can just confirm to the committee that the project that my colleagues spoke about earlier, that we are going to undertake and carry through cost from the previous financial year, are all funded, and funds have been made available even during the MTF cycle to implement all those projects that have been identified. And though I would have loved to have more, but we have allocated, and we are going to work within what has been allocated. And on that note, Mr. President, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the budget presentation, which tried to effectify the APPs. About allow honorable members to start engaging with this. Three presentations, and maybe less subsequent. Let's start with the first, go to the second, and we'll come to the budget.
Saying that the finance are speaking to both, because they've got one allocation in terms of finance. If we have the three flowing the way you will be sitting with a serious problem. I mean, for an example, if you take the last comment made now, that they'll be sitting with close to 452 million as operational budget for this financial year. But the point is that I see them playing a very coordination way, because they've got nine other provinces. They've got people employed in provinces. What are those people doing? That's the first question you want to ask, because there should be that relationship, that intergovernmental relationship. Now, you know, that speaks to almost the three units that they refer to now. And I'm just saying, you know, the difficulty of us following, more especially that they, in most cases, they just glance through their presentations. You know, it's not went into details in dealing with the issues there. It's another problem that we'll be faced with. Hence, I thought we'd be picking up on the general issues, the common issues that then deal with. That's the point I wanted to raise with yourself. That's the challenge we will have. But I'm up for now.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, no, it's true what Member Matila is saying. But I'm going to ask questions on for clarity on the first document. I don't know what do you call this document, this one, on slide number 21 on 4. It is governance, intergovernmental relations and performance progress. Out of 6 targeted provinces, 5 provinces, and it's named there. Now I see 32 municipalities in Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal provinces are currently implementing based on the framework. Can you please, you see why I'm asking this question? Mpumalanga is on fire as we speak now. Things are upside down. On slide number 22, Chair, and I'm raising questions for clarification so that they must clarify us. On slide 22, partnership, the last bullet, partnership were established with the Free State Provincial Department, the Hawks and Special Investigating Unit for purposes of accelerating. Give us feedback on this thing. You see, Chair, what makes it so difficult on this presentation is that there's no deadline when these things, but you will give us. Chair, and then a question on 30, on slide number 30. You see, the department is saying that it's one on trade, that and municipal demarcation board MDC is being monitored. Quarterly reports were produced in this regard. You know, Chairperson, the reason why I'm asking this, you remember when the demarcation board appeared before us 2 weeks ago. They said they are not reporting to the minister. They are independent, as the constitution is saying. Now, what report is this? Clarity, Chair, on that one. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just worried about these municipalities which don't spend, but at last when you check the monies, they are not there. So, but on the other hand, they need some additional funding and the like. How are they going to monitor these monies? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe that's an addition to what the point was by Member Pope. We made some recommendations some years ago when the intervention was
we can be terrified. You know, it's one around about two or three municipalities which had serious problems. We don't have a report. The second area, Chair, I'm not sure which slide is that, but it's around the support given to municipalities. The support given to municipalities. And then, well, you know, it's crafted very well. As we speak now, we can indicate that in KwaZulu-Natal, already there are four interventions that we must attend to. Already. We have just dealt with other interventions. In Mpumalanga, he's just indicated that Mpumalanga is on fire. You know, you check all the protests that are there, already there's two or three in the northwest, you know, there's three. Now, why not you, what support are you talking about? And which municipalities, in terms of provinces, how do you support, how do you deal with them? Well, that's a specific aspect. Why not sure what is it that you're talking about? And if we can be terrified, so that we understand. Because you see, when we started here in this term of parliament, where you know, a very nice picture was painted to us as to what the department is going to do. And each and every financial year, you've got new issues coming. But we don't have conclusions of what has happened. Of, you know, are they continuing with what they said? What are the issues? The last area is just on traditional affairs, because I know one. I see in one slide that while the CFO is talking about support from this particular committee, but if you look at what they are saying, is they only want input and consult with the National Assembly Committee. Mm-hmm. And then it's in the slide itself,
portfolio committee.
But then with the portfolio committee. But then they come here, they want support from us. I'm not sure. You know, if they can clarify us why is it from the portfolio committee. Parliament has got two committees. That is because you see the trend is in Parliament, and that's not with this department only. Departments will focus in the towards the National Assembly. Yeah? When they have problems, they come to the SOP to assist them to deal with their problems. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Chair. Chair, my apologies for being in, up and down, in and out. I had to handle a crisis which is not here in Cape Town, outside of Cape Town. But thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I've listened to some of the things while I was sitting here. And I've read, in the first document, Chair, there's a lot of things mentioned, and my colleagues, Honourable Tila, is touching on it. Chair, I've got a big problem with the department. When the department comes to us and talks about ethical issues on local government. And when you go to the ground, to the actual ethical issues, you find officials, Chair, doing nothing. You find officials being rude to the community. You find officials, and Chair, we talk about the directors, we talk about the people who are earning lots of money, Chair. You don't see their job description. You don't see what they're doing in the municipality. And I will keep on saying this thing. Right now, in the Northern Gate, there's a municipality who's got 300 people too much on their books. People are always working. They're supposed to earn on Friday, the last day of the month. They'll earn on Monday their money because there's no money. They wait for people to pay and all those things. And it's been going on for the past 6 months. The other thing is, Chair, is whenever you look through the department, always there's exclusion of the Northern Cape. And there are serious crises in certain municipalities in the Northern Cape. The Mere municipality, it can't sustain itself. There's a lot of reports concerning the Mere municipality. What is the department doing about those municipalities? The other municipality, Chair, is the Kehalib municipality. The other one is the Chris municipality. Lot of issues, Chair, with their things on effectiveness and ethical issues. These things are not happening on the ground. And it's time, Chair, that we must say to the department, don't come and tell us this is what you have implemented and what we're seeing on the ground is nothing.
I hope you've seen what the Mpumalanga Premier said. He's giving the MMs 14 days to tell, give him reasons why those who got disclaimers can't be fired. And that's an act. Why don't you as a department also use the very same act on the local government and provincial issues? You are the department. There's an act that covers you. Why don't you act? Why do you wait? And that's a science chair telling me that the people of South Africa are not important to the department, and this department is the most, is a critical, is like hell. This department is like hell to our people. This is a service delivery department. It's a department that must see to it that people need to be serviced. It's a department that must see that the taxpayers' money is being used wisely. But if you check the department nationally, you check the reports, they've got excellent reports. But then you go to the output check. It's a different story. And that's my concern. My concern is I'm not guiding anybody. You can, all I'm saying, people must become first, not only in words, but in our deeds. The next thing, Chair, is this, and I agree with Alderman Matila. I've seen that thing in the slide, Alderman Matila. They said they put inputs on the portfolio committee. I wanted the department to realize that as the NCOP, we are directly responsible for local government. You were supposed to put us first before the MA. But that's the sign of respect that the NCOP gets from all the departments. The NCOP is direct responsible for provincial issues, not the NA. And you guys need to separate those two things. The other thing is, I've got this document I just heard about the Khoisan people. I want to ask the other department. It was in 2009 or 2010. They came to us with that bill. That bill is not yet here. Why doesn't the Khoisan people be really treated as real, also the traditional communities of this country? Why is it a problem to have the Khoisan people there treated like the same old traditional communities in South Africa? Why? What is stopping the department to bring that bill, to finalize that bill, so that the people can be acknowledged and recognized, and the traditional leaders of the Khoisan people can also be treated the same like the all other ethnic groups in South Africa? But they are not being treated the same. And yet we in South Africa talks about we are a rainbow nation. How can we be a rainbow nation if we exclude the indigenous people, especially from the Northern Cape, the Western Cape, and part of the Eastern Cape? People were there right from the beginning, traditional communities. We must stop playing this position thing, Chair. I see the question, there's a cultural thing. You want to acknowledge the culture of the Khoisan people, but you don't want to recognize the Khoisan people as the first indigenous people of this country. What are you saying to us? How can you accept my... Let me make an example. How can you accept... I am not a Khoi. My mom is from these people. And I can't say, I can't disown my mom. How on earth can you accept the culture of the Khoisan people, but you don't recognize them as the first indigenous people of this country? Why? That's my concern. And I keep on saying this. In the Northern Cape, this is provincial traditional house, they have opted one of the Khoisan people to speak on behalf of the Khoisan people, and those who were coming in the department since 2009 knows this issue. They have taken up the issue of one of those guys. They didn't even get sitting allowance up until now, and the department was supposed to come back to us to find out. The department never came back to us. They never let him to the secretary of the committee concerning those issues. Khoisan people are one of my heartbeat issues. And that's a problem for me, that the department is playing delaying tactics concerning that community. I never went to the newspapers concerning the Khoisan. Never in my life will I play politics of the life of people. I will always fight the department in a meeting like this, tell the department that this is not language you're doing. So all I'm asking this morning, please recognize those people. The other last question, Chair, is concerning the finances. I hear what the department are saying, Chair. I'm going to put it bluntly to the department. I think the department must be honest with us
and tell this committee why is it that with all this good plans, these plans are not from yesterday, these plans are for the past 4 years, why is it then that we still have municipalities having an MM, an acting MM for more than 2 years? Why is it that municipalities, the CFOs, are not really qualified CFOs? Why? In the Northern Cape, we've got a problem with that. And the last question, Chair, is how long will it take for the department, because my colleagues have talked about the time frames and all that. I also want to ask a question in, how long will it take the department to rectify this financial issue in local government where people can't give account to the AG, there's no documents, but they spend millions of rand. How will you handle that? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Lord.
Thank you, Chair. First, with a disclaimer, I'll take the liberty to ask and engage randomly because I have no access to the presentation. That was just a disclaimer. Chair, I think also as a committee, I think we some nice small piece of information in relation to what the CFO has said around the equitable share and the treasury and unspent funds in terms of the grant, what happens. I think the committee would recall that these issues of equitable share, municipalities complain day in, day out. When we meet them in terms of funds, shortages of funds, this. I think it starts to assist us to have a real meaningful engagements with them around these issues. I mean, I'm just foreseeing this for the Salga week that is coming up, for us to engage with them. And I hope our researcher really would undertake that. So as a friend of the CFO, I think he's given him tips, so hopefully we'll get a good piece from him in relation to that. Then maybe let me go to the traditional affairs department, Department of Traditional Affairs. I have maybe I ask a question if there's two points that got me a bit worried, Chair. One is on that they are going to do bursaries for the children living in the communities, and including the children of the traditional leaders. So and we know that that's that would be a cross mandate as well with other departments. So are they in collaboration with such departments? Various departments do that, and I'm not too sure what's the rationale behind that. But also, Chair, what it means, because they talked about qualifications. Who qualifies? It means they've got to do a means test. And whether that means test, this means testing tool has been developed as part of the target. So how will we engage, or how will we gauge this thing come next year? We'll see, they tell us, no, we've given 5 children and we don't even know how those children were given and determined, and the need determined. I think it is a matter that one would like more sort of concrete clarification there. The second one, Chair, is the issue of the interfaith. They are saying that they will establish interfaith structures, and I'm not too sure whether if you are in tradition, you are also a faith being. You might just be traditional and not faith. One would have understood intercultural something, not interfaith. So I'm not too sure the rationale of choosing the interfaith per se. And I'm not too sure whether, that relates to social cohesion. But in relation to the department also, that might be relevant there, whether they are, because what I've been hearing throughout listening, in particular what is presented here today, I think the majority of what is which I understand, if you are establishing a department, that perhaps must be your major focus. But the major focus is into the department. But a concern, Chair, you would know as a committee, as members of the other committees, that is dealing with the two critical issues that also fall under the jurisdiction of the traditional communities, the petitions committee and the bill that we are busy with, the traditional courts bill with the other committee. I didn't hear anything in terms of any role that they would play in relation to even that part. And why I'm bringing that part, Chair, because communities are raising the issue of, even if you look at the elections, traditional councils elections, the participation there is a matter of concern. Particularly in my province, there's a trend. We have very quite less people interested in those traditional councils, elections, that kind of thing. So one would be interested to see that these plans, that these APP would talk to such issues, issues of gender, Chair. I'm not sure if they are in the priorities, those the 16 priorities. I don't think there's any. Well, they did mention something around public awareness, empowerment, but I guess that's too much to the leaders, to the traditional leadership itself. And in a lesser scale, if there is any, on the people living in those communities in terms of their rights, I don't know if it's part of their mandate. But seeing that they are not hesitant to take anything that is a cross mandate as well. So I guess this is a critical part, point and a critical issue as well for them. Then, Chair, the other issue. Oh, and then the compliance and the assessment issue. I see, for instance, in KZN Province, Chair, is now moving into establishing or turning around. They've adopted a policy now that says they are not going to be these two song center issues. The structures. They are also including the traditional courts, traditional courts or traditional structures that they have for community service as community service centers. And surely the one of the priorities should be that this department is working with such, because they are saying they are monitoring and they are interacting with provinces, but provinces are moving, they are adding more burdens in such structures, which in turn might cause issues of tension or issues of lack of service delivery per se. I think those are the issues around my issues around the traditional affairs. But then one or two issues relating to the department, the other one. The issue, I think it's Program 6, Community Works Program, I think. Chair, they are raising the issue around economic development. It sounded to me new creation around these economic things. And
nothing that talks direct to what we're seeing every day, the non-functionality of the LEDs, whether it's an abundant aspect now, whether the department is not interested, because they are talking what they would do more in the other areas of development, one or two other departments that they would partner with. And as we know, Chen, you know what we discover in the LED in municipalities, they just appoint. You know, I mean, somebody who doesn't even understand business, you know, who's never done, who's never failed a what is this thing, business accounting in school or some in metric. That's just somebody, anybody, just gets appointed as a manager for LED, and to an extent where these LEDs they have nothing. And it's not combined with even this public works program, at least to have some activities that is happening there. So one would be interested if they are not interested, you know, in the LEDs anymore. Then the other one, Chair, that is the legislation and the regulation. And I would say, Chair, that my own assessment is that given the presentation last year and what is presented here today, I'm observing, Chair, that it's nothing is sound completed and acted upon in terms of the current, they are talking about draft this, draft that. There's about 2-3 drafts something. That they mentioned, and it's a draft demarcation. We've been waiting for these things, and one would like to understand when they are saying draft. Are they? What do they mean? It means it's something that doesn't exist. Still can change. Honestly speaking, it exists as a draft, but once you formalize that something, you know, it's not tangible enough, so to speak. And we are having deadlines, Chair, in terms of the legislative program for Parliament to process. I think it's around the mid-June, where we'll not accept anything. So one would be very interested, unless it's quite urgent. So, but also those things should have been now in the process themselves. There are things that they are saying they are almost entering Parliament. Or others, they are saying draft this, draft that. Right? So we can't say that would be any performance on that one, Chair, if they don't meet the deadline. So it's a non-starter, so to speak, in terms of the that being part of what they think will be delivered when Parliament would have arisen. But it's quite important also to note, obviously, that they have to, and it's been a question that we've been raising with them. The CFO has indicated that they are required to reduce by 1% the staff. We don't know whether they've ever been full complement, or well. Even that 1% comes from where you still have a lot of vacancies. I don't know what's the percentage in terms of the vacancies per se. And also in the department, I don't know, because I came when they were doing the third program, so I missed the first two. But sweet old issue, Chair, of the equity, I'm not sure how it's going to be met, and in particular that one of disability, it's my own interest. Thank you, Chair. Oh, that's the last one to the traditional affairs, Chair. A lot of what they were presenting was talking to activities it's not to respond or to the offense of my colleague Kunda. But I noticed they're talking, I don't know whether they wanted to bring him a nice piece of chocolate around this Khoisan. because I think there's a lot around for the Khoisan, this heritage cultural, there's about two, three things that they've mentioned there in their presentation. But one would be interested to see that there are many other communities, Chair, that that such activities would have to be either they talk to provinces to do it if they can't in terms of costs, but cultural and all of those things. You see, in provinces, Chair, and we're faced with this issue of the alleged xenophobic and all of that, it becomes quite more imperative for the department to start looking at cross culture, teaching tolerance and all of that. I don't know if they something that they wish, but they can't do it right away. It would be interesting to hear their opinion or what they are up to do in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Just a small thing, Chair. Just on these economic activities or on traditional leadership or traditional communities. Chair, we are sitting with a lot of petitions before us. We say something different. I'm not sure if there's that relationship between the different departments dealing with, firstly the issue around finalizing on the landless issue that has been raised by traditional communities. The second issue is around the involvement of traditional leadership on those economic activities. The third issue is around, you said 360 cases has been finalized around these claims, leadership claims and all those things, because that has an impact. And aside the Northwest only, just around, is it Bafokeng area? Because we're sitting with. And that's the reason why I'm asking is whether is there any communication or relationship between the different departments dealing with those specific, because government will be faced with a very serious problem. Because if parliament will come and pronounce differently from what they get from those traditional communities as far as what is happening there on the ground, it means whatever that you're doing there, will be something that you do seated in your offices but not even consulting with communities on the ground. I know, I can tell you, there's still a dispute within the Pilani community around the leadership group. It has not been analyzed, it has not been dealt with, it was part of the... And how many... I'm not talking, it's not the Pilani alone. If you take the Rustenburg, there's about 30 traditional communities there. About 30. That's it. And that is the... It's about the Platinum Belt, which is a problem. Now you are coming with your own program here, whilst other departments are coming with different programs, in as far as that process is concerned. And then we are told by those communities that they don't even know, because it seems Bafokeng has been imposed on them. It's not even a traditional leader. You understand that situation. Now I'm not sure whether you have investigated to deal with that specific case. What has happened? Where are you now today? But you're also saying you're dealing with traditional leaders with economic around those economic activities. What is it that? What role are you playing there? We don't understand. We don't know because you're not clarifying us. That's the point I wanted to raise so that they can, in a way clarify us so that we understand what it is that they're doing.
Thank you very much. Maybe before I can give them to respond, let me just throw something so that after that we conclude. Maybe one emphasis is that if the department engaged with the portfolio committee,
stakeholders in these cognitive boosters. So there are a lot of things that we need to try to engage on and see how we can resolve. That's one thing. It's just a point of emphasis. The issue that I would want to raise, I think members have in a way raised, but my Honorable Mandela have raised the question of cadetal leadership around Northwestern. I think that must be noted, because we just from there. It's like in the issue of landless chiefs. They are chiefs, but they don't have land. They complain of many things. I think that must be investigated and assist the committee on petition to take the process further. This issue of funding equitable share. I see now there's this approach of differentiated approach. I don't know to how far are we with that approach, because from time to time municipality complains with funding, especially equitable share, which is at their own discretion to do certain things. If that could be speeded up, this talk of differentiated approach or rural, is it rural funding? Something like that. Monitoring support and intervention bill, which to me is like what we have recommended in 2009 to say we need a legislation on intervention. I should believe it's part of that. Maybe we need to resume it quicker. If it gets passed cabinet, it should not stay for a long time and then it comes to us 2 weeks when it needs concurrence. We need to get it quickly so that we're able to look at it, because intervention is our core function, especially in this committee. I'm sure now we're faced with about 10 interventions, section 139. And there is a lot of confusion in terms of that. The provincial executive has have their own understanding of intervention. The department has got its own understanding of intervention. For example, you receive a letter saying from Northwest, discretionary intervention. Immediately you mention discretionary, you see lack of capacity from the province. Because if it is discretionary, why should it come to the issue? I'm trying to show the frustration. But because after discretionary has been mentioned, they will quote 1391B, which compels the issue to go. So I think capacity also must be noted by the department, so that you build capacity in the MECs, so that before they apply, they carefully look at the wording, so that if they are using 139 of Municipal Finance Management Act, we don't have to write and go there. It's their own thing. But the minute they say 139, 1B, they say Parliament must come. It's something that we have picked up and said we need to recommend to the department to start taking the ministry and the MEC, not only at the minimum level, a very serious workshop must be done. We have done it with them, but we thought maybe if at the executive level it can be intensified, then it will assist minimizing our up and down on something that was not necessary, because you might find that the MEC wanted to use the discretion, but unfortunately that person right was the mind. It then become parliamentary. So these are some of the things that you need to do and assist our some of the provincial MEC in terms of applying section 139B. But I think the monitoring, whatever, and intervention, if we could speed this thing up, some of the aspects can be resolved. The other issue is the issue of the funding, the delays on funding, especially on disaster. We want to be sure whether is it COCT analysis with that fund or national treasure, so that we assist
to build the ground, because some of the disaster areas have not been attended to even now, and we'll be going to another summer, and it will be we'll be adding disaster over disaster over disaster. Some bridges are not yet constructed, some roads are still bad, and these are disaster issues. So we need to be told. You need to cook and go to that fund or national treasury, so that we are able to make noise from the parliament point of view. If it's national treasury, we are able to call the ministry or the department, so that we are saying this lay is causing a harm to the people who need that service up down there. The municipal demarcation bill, we have just met them two, three weeks back, and as they said, they are some form of independent, but the way you give a report is like you are busy. But they say, no, we are coming to parliament. But it's like they cannot take mandate from the department. But in the report, is like they are part of the what I want to say is that there are a lot of, there are areas of protest. Like it was a Free State, and there was this metro, extant image in Gauteng, which I think demarcation. It was not clear to them what is their brief, where do they take the final mandate? We even recommended, which you must also note, that when we come back, August, somewhere there, we are going to host a demarcation summit, where we would need the department to present their understanding or their approach, demarcation board, or whichever is the stakeholder, to make them present, so that we take the discussion, the views, and try to minimize tension, protests that arise out of demarcation, or assist the very same board so that it discharges its own task, because it raised many challenges. And we thought with that demarcation report that we are calling as this committee, we'll also call the portfolio committee. Because as usual, when we have this type of things where the department comes, we would want the portfolio committee to be part of us, even though they don't mention us. It's like we're not existing. I think that is one thing that you need to note. If need be, we cannot even be sure, we can even hand over the arrangement of demarcation summit to the department, but be part of it. We are not selfish in terms of information. So if that is the case, if the minister feels correctly, it's all right. But we must be part of that, because it's our conceptual our concept that we have started to do. The other thing that, the budget, I'm not sure, as when I talked to the recent census, State of Africa, whether it still talks to the previous South Africa, because if it doesn't, it is still going to have a backlog. Because we are saying the population is increased in particular housing. There is a burden of service delivery. If it's not taken into consideration, Honorable Martin, if this factor is not taken into consideration, we would have a problem in future in terms of service delivery. Whether water and electricity is not there, because planning must take that into consideration. The other issue that I would want, some of these are comments, I'm sure you realize that I'm trying to make a comment so that we don't waste time answering. Where is that provincial ranking? There was a muted provincial ranking or something like that, a unit that would assist. Because when we go to municipalities, we don't see this unit. We have been interacting in almost all provinces. Or is there a response team, or what do you call it? What? Multi-purpose ranking, which is based
technical support unit.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, because when we go to these chronic municipalities, you only see the administrator from the MEC only. You don't see the technical support that is based in provinces. Or maybe there is no communication between the technical support and the provincial government. So I think something somewhere there should be looked into, because when we make the recommendation, if the administrator alone cannot be able, and the administrator is only tied to a particular terms of reference. But if this technical team is there, we should go beyond, bridge, you know, gray areas between the province and the national. It will sort of assist in terms of this intervention. In the very same state, we made a recommendation during the debate about Free State corruption cases that we had evidence. But we are happy because in Nala there is an action. But it's like the action is misplaced, somebody else still cannot be prosecuted. In Tabang Putrajana, we sent the department because it was higher than the province. We thought maybe if the province could do that, it might not do it objectively. Tabang Putrajana, there was a resignation of the MM and the disappearance of some checks. And then we said during the debate, and the department was taking it up. Then there are many things, maybe we can review those debates and take some of this recommendation and give the department to sort of reflect on them. That would be important. Budget. House resolution. Yes. Yeah, if they could check on that one. That would be fine. Yes. Local government turnaround strategy was its main IOTA was operation Green Audit 2014. But it's like the department is not fledging in March. Next year it's 2014. We don't see whether the department have analyzed the message till only 2014 in terms of whether we'll achieve it. If we're not achieving it, what are we putting in place? What are we preparing? Will we shift the target to 2021? Or is there anything alternative? Whatever. It's not well flagged. It needs to be flagged because we've been making a lot of slogans about it ever since the conception of local government turnaround strategy in 2009. I think there must be an expression on that. Last thing. We made to run around as a committee to pass Municipal System Amendment Act. And we thought it would resolve the question of skills and professionalization and all sorts of, but it's like it's not implemented. It's not applied. I'm not sure. If members would remember how we evaluated and we made it fast, and we had to, there were questions, political questions, technical questions, whatever. I don't know how far, party questions, whether a federal party can be MM and all. But now it's law. Where is it? Is it complex? If it is complex, so that we know that. Or is it unconstitutional? It didn't meet constitutional expectations. Yeah. Because sometimes when answers come on the ground, you refer to it, but it's not there. It's not applied. We need to have a clear understanding on it. There were recommendations of local government to it, which we thought the department might have them. Some of these things, but it's more on the model of funding. Maybe as a process issue, we can engage it further. Because we might prefer that immediately after this budget is passed, somewhere in September we visit with the department. There are things that we need a time, 2-3 hours together. Maybe look into some of these things. Yeah, I think these are the remarks that I have. If there are questions, I'm sure there are 1 or 2 questions there. But I wanted to make some of these recommendations so that when you go to the minister, these are some of the things that you present with what members have said. Then I can give you the member strategies to lead us to whatever.
Chairperson, thank you very much. A number of issues have been canvassed, and perhaps for Honourable Member Zimanda's benefit, I think he wasn't here when I was being introduced. My name is Vusima Donzena. I do so deliberately because I know him and I come a long way when I was in social development.
From the university?
Well, from university days, yes.
We fought from
there. Yes. Chairperson, a lot of issues have been raised. Some are comments, which I'm sure we take very well. And of course questions we need to deal with more directly. There's a sizable number of resident experts from our department here who will field specific questions. I might steal some of the questions they might deal with or they might wish to deal with, but I'm sure they will expand on them if they should see the need to do so. But I'll try and deal with the more kind of all-embracing questions, the first of which being the one that was raised about what are provincial officials doing? And there's an issue raised also by Honourable Member Gunda about the conduct of certain officials at municipal level. And perhaps the need for us to establish a common understanding on what the constraints are and what the possibilities are to deal with the concern that is expressed in those questions. We are operating within a system of concurrent functions with national, provincial, in this instance, local government. These being three spheres that are interdependent, but in the way they operate, the reporting lines do not always suggest that they converge at the minister's desk. So that does pose some challenge with regard to how far we are able to respond effectively on what officials do on a daily basis, and in fact, how do they relate to members of the public. National departments such as ours have a mandate to turn out policies, regulations, systems, norms, including in concert with the Department of Public Service and Administration, talk about how public servants across the board should interact with members of the community in accordance with the Badu Bele principles. But we must accept that there are certain things that are beyond the reach of regulation and policy. How people behave on a daily basis doesn't mean the absence of systems and policies and regulations. It means that there are certain limitations. That the presence of regulation doesn't mean that people are always going to behave in the way they are expected to. But we certainly have to find ways and means of making sure that these policies and the value systems are in fact fully implemented throughout government. It is certainly a matter that will receive attention, especially as we continue to grapple with the issue of cooperative governance. The minister has noted that we've done a great deal with regard to, despite the limitations, We've done a lot of work with regard to our focus on local government support. But we need to look at inter-sphere relations as a critical area of intervention. And one hopes that in doing that, we will get to a point where, although our system is not a unitary one, which in a sense locates power in one center, you have three spheres, we'll have to find a way in which we are able to influence, we are able to directly impact on how the spheres themselves relate, but also how public servants across the board conduct the business of government. This is perhaps related to a point that the chair raised later on. When I make a point about the fact that our system is neither unitary or federal, but a complex system of cooperative governance, it impacts directly on what late Minister Shikaka did when he established the technical support units, which were to be placed in all provinces across the country. Many MECs from a number of provinces expressed a concern that the presence of technical support units in the way that they were conceived was beginning to encroach onto the space of provinces. And that being the case, effectively that the constitution was being somewhat undermined by that effort. What Minister Baloyi has done since he has come on board is to disestablish the technical assistance units. Technical, what are they called? Support units. What we have in place now is what you call service delivery facilitators. These are, this is a new look unit, if you like, which is based in the government component, MISA, which essentially is on the lookout for areas where there are service delivery challenges. It provides support and linkages with the national department, but more particularly with MISA, with regard to possible blockages, with regard to service delivery, with matters of infrastructure and support for people at a local level. So those are some of the things that I thought I should flag for now. Perhaps let me deal with the last question and then I'll pass on to my colleagues. Chairperson, you've made a point about the LGTAS being perhaps a very important intervention since 2009, and that Operation Clean Audit was pretty much the very basis of that intervention. Let me say that we are currently rounding up our state of local government reports, which is based on LGTAS. The minister will be bringing that to Parliament, and I'm sure he will share it with both houses. When he had the opportunity to speak to the portfolio committee, he made an undertaking that once this report has been taken to Cabinet in the course of June, he will then come and present it to Parliament. So he will share it certainly with the Portfolio Committee as well as the Select Committee. In that report, it will be set out very clearly how we are faring in relation to this matter of Operation Clean Audit. But alongside that, it will also be clear as to what progress are we making with regard to accelerating service delivery, with better relating to good governance, sound financial management, and the like, some of which matters have a direct bearing on matters relating to Operation Clean Audit. So these matters will certainly be coming to Parliament, and this House will have the opportunity to interact with that report when the Minister comes to present it. And I'm sure he will not delegate that task. He will present that report personally. Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know whether at this point I should pass on to my colleagues who will then deal with the questions that relate to their areas of work. So.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and the DG. In terms of the funding for disaster management, the fund is with the National Treasury. None of the funds can be paid without their intervention. They do the final payments, so the fund is with the National Treasury. It is not within the Disaster Management Center. In terms of outstanding funding, as far as the National Disaster Management is concerned, there's no outstanding funding with us. What has, however, all the funding has been processed for all disasters that have been declared. That is in relation to immediate relief. What is currently underway is the evaluation of the recent disasters for long-term reconstruction and rehabilitation. And that funding will only be made available through the Adjustments Appropriation Bill at the end of the financial year. But currently we don't have any outstanding funding to any of the provinces or municipalities.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue that you raised on the interventions bill, I think we agree with the sentiments that you've expressed. That there's serious challenges in terms of understanding at the provincial level, in terms of the triggers for the intervention, and the processes that should be followed in terms of how you invoke Section 129. The bill is really focused on providing clear guidance on the processes, but also stipulating the roles of provinces and also municipalities with respect to the triggers for intervention. So from our side, we've received comments from the state law advisor on the draft bill. The bill currently is with the minister for processing. We're hoping that process, the cabinet process, we still need to, after cabinet approves, still need to gazette it for public comment, which will be a period of about a month. I'm just worried about the timelines that were indicated earlier. But we will have to look at the issue of timelines. But the bill is ready, Chair, and then it's really looking at addressing the concerns that you've raised. There were also a set of questions relating to the equitable share. This is not necessarily my area, but I will attempt to respond to some of these issues. The equitable share formula, Chair, has been reviewed, and it was approved by Cabinet, the new formula, which will be rolled out starting in 2013 in Montpellier over the MTF period. That formula, it actually takes into account the results, the census results in 2011 in terms of the movement of the population and so on. But it's not only focusing on the formula now on the population, but it also considers other challenges in terms of if you look at the metros, they will also be receiving additional funding to address issues of urban poverty, urbanization into those urban areas. But also your rural municipalities are also considered in terms of their ability to raise revenue and so on. So there is an attempt to actually balance it so that your poor rural municipalities are not necessarily disadvantaged because of the conditions that we are in. So it will be from 2013, that's the first year where it will be rolled out. And it's also in line in terms then of the differentiated approach. The other set of questions on the LED, the program CWP, let me speak to the program that we are managing from the branch on LED, which is separate from the whole community works program, which is focused around the creation of jobs and so on. The LED program, the focus from the branch side is around the implementation of the LED framework, which really is looking at assisting municipalities to understand how they need to approach LED and there's a need for a paradigm shift in terms of understanding what LED means, so that it's not seen just as this small project they're carrying and so on, but how municipalities plan is mainstreamed in the overall planning processes of municipalities. They're able to look at economic opportunities, but also how the municipality itself, when it rolls out its own infrastructure programs and so on, they're able to create opportunities for entrepreneurs. We will also, in this financial year, be rolling out a program, Chepperton, where we'll be establishing business forums, district business forums, across the country, where we will be encouraging now these partnerships between district municipalities and the business communities within those districts, so that we are able then to develop this regional approach to economic development at the regional level, but through these partnerships with municipalities. I think the issues of the Northern Cape, Chair, municipalities like Mears and other municipalities, it will to some extent be addressed through the new formula for the equitable share. But this is also a question, Chair, that it's a question that is really beyond just the control of the department, in terms of how do you also deal with municipalities such as me and other such municipalities, because we still have quite a number of such municipalities in the country. So it's an issue of the model also of local government. You see, the approach that we've adopted with the differentiated approach is that in the context where there's no clear decision that you need to do away with certain municipalities or you need to review the wall-to-wall arrangement, it means what we need to work within the current system. And the only way, if we're to work within the current system, is then to say, develop a model on how you support the different types of municipalities in a differentiated approach. So how you coordinate the state as a whole to support municipalities such as me. Municipalities such as me, in terms of planning, they might not need to perform all the functions that they are allocated in terms of legislation. But looking at the context of such municipalities, maybe they need to focus on few powers and functions, and then look at the support that both national and provinces will be providing to such municipalities. So the differentiated approach, that's what it's focusing on, to say how do we support such municipalities, because on their own, they cannot survive, they're not able to generate any revenue. So they are dependent on the grants and so on, they will share from national. But I'm saying in the context where there's no decision on whether we're doing away with such municipalities, the only approach that we can manage at this stage is how do we support them to sustain them in the long term. So I think I've covered some of the issues.
Chair, thanks. I would like to respond to two issues. The one is the clarity around the Municipal Demarcation Board and our reference in our presentation to the entity report and how does that relate to its independence. The reports are purely done within the context of compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. Each one of these entities receive money from the departmental budget. And it's important for good governance that we are be able to, from an oversight point of view,
can hold these entities accountable for how these monies are spent, because it's on our books. And that is the extent of the report for all these entities. It's become a standard practice within the department, and it's not about interfering with the legislative mandate of the MDB. The committee would also be aware that the minister instituted a demarcation review process, and a task team has been appointed, and that task team is busy concluding its work to advise the minister on how the demarcation process would need to be reviewed, what's working well, what changes might need to be considered, what possible implications does that review have for changes to the existing demarcation act, right? And that is work that's currently in progress, and the minister is leading that particular initiative. I will now move to Chairperson's question was, where are we at with implementation of the Municipal Systems Act as amended in 2011? A few points to make there, Chair. One, it is highly regrettable that the regulations were not promulgated at the same time of passing the Amendment Act. There has been an unfortunate lapse of time. I think the transition within the department and the political leadership transitions have, you know, needed to familiarize themselves with the draft regulations that were in process at the time. Where we are now, Chair, is that on the 7th of March this year, the minister released the draft regulations for public comment. That public comment closed on the 10th of April. We received extensive comments from municipalities, provinces, MECs, civil society, and other interested organizations or professional associations. We are now at the stage of finalizing and incorporating all of those very rich and valuable comments we received. We are heading towards getting ready for promulgation of these regulations for senior managers, and that is municipal managers and Section 56 managers, all the managers reporting to municipal managers. That will be the first cut of the regulations that will be promulgated this year, so Chairperson. And we are well on track with that, and the regulations will be having very specific guidance to deal with some of these very concerning trends that we've seen that you've referred to in a number of different comments and questions here today around competence issues. How come incompetent people are appointed in either as MMs or CFOs or other Section 56 positions as well? And these regulations would go a long way to give effect to the intent of professionalizing the local government space as well. Alongside that, Chairperson, we are also working on a more comprehensive set of regulations for all municipal managers from the lowest level to the highest level. And that's a piece of work that's at quite an advanced stage as well, so that we can give effect to both the top layer as well as everyone below that. Okay. Chairperson, we are sitting with a matter that the Minister is dealing with at present. There is a constitutional court challenge offered by SAMU, and that is currently a matter that we're paying attention to. Our minister has had engagements with SAMU to look for a way of resolving their concerns and trying to find an amicable way forward. And we are confident that that matter could be successfully resolved within the near future. Chairperson, those were the two specific things I wanted to speak to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with the questions on traditional affairs, and the DG and other colleagues will take the more difficult questions, so I'll take the easier ones. The question that was asked to us on the bursaries for children of traditional communities, or including children of traditional leaders.
We are in the process of developing policy, and we hope to finalize this before end of the year, so that we are ready for the beginning of the year. But the rationale is that there are fields that pertain to traditional affairs, like anthropology, ethnology, and such courses. And there is a depth of expert in this field. And unless we intervene now, we may find ourselves in 20 or so years having repeating the same run of history, where the history and the ethnology and anthropology of our people is written by foreigners, because we would not be having people knowledgeable in the history and the practices of our people being expert in that field. But even if you may know the history by oral tradition, you know, whatever you write may not have the authority equal to that of a person who is a doctor or an expert, you know, a professor in that field. So there is therefore a need to intervene now, because the study in this field were at some stage discouraged in favor of natural sciences and all that, but they remain important, and therefore a need for intervention now. There will definitely be a means test that those who can afford to pay for themselves will not be catered for, but that is being included in the policy. But it's essential that we intervene now to produce experts in this field of anthropology, ethnology, and history, and so on. Now, the interfaith structures. I'll just deal with the legal mandate of the department in engaging in the interfaith sector. Honorable members will remember that in 2002, immediately after the passing of the Act of the Commission on the Promotion of the Rights of the Cultural, Religious, and Linguistic Communities, the President designated the Act, the administration of the Act, to the Minister of then Provincial and Local Government, which is, as you would know now, divided into two, including the Department of Traditional Affairs. Now, the Constitution, Chapter 9, enjoins the department or the executive to ensure that they support and ensure that they support the Chapter 9 institutions, which the Sierra Commission is one, and they ensure that the commissions function effectively, and so on. And it is within that mandate that the Department of Traditional Affairs, as a designated department, has to ensure that the programs arising out of that Act, the CRL Rights Act, are carried forth and actually embarked upon to ensure that the commission on its own is supported and is effective. Section 36 of that Act calls for the establishment of councils by communities in pursuit of those rights, linguistic, cultural, and so on. And in this context, the religious communities have formed what is called National Interfaith Council in terms of that Act, to pursue their religious Act, to ensure that religious programs are broadcasted on the SABC, there is equity there with regard to programs relating to traditional healing, Muslims, Hindus, and so all the religious formations and denominations in our country. So, among others, that's what NICSA, as the Interfaith Council, is pursuing. But as you know, we've talked about the National Khoisan Council, which is also formed to pursue the rights of the Khoi and San people, who are considered the minority, part of the minorities in our country. Now, in that context, therefore, the Department of Traditional Affairs has to ensure that these councils, rights and objectives are pursued, and that's why the department is engaging. So that's the legal mandate for us to pursue the interfaith council and all that, because otherwise, if we would be supporting them per denomination, various churches, it would actually be an insurmountable task. So the it's better to support them as a council encompassing all the other faiths in one. The gender representativeness of particularly women in the traditional councils. The Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act calls for one third of the councillors in the traditional councils to be women, and there is a bill on gender equality bill that calls for 50-50 in all government institutions. So we are taking it from the Governance Framework Act, and we are going to ensure that indeed one third of the council remains women. But of course, this is a provincial matter that the provinces are running with. As a national department, we our role is to support provinces to ensure that the traditional councils are indeed constituted. The programs on promotion of local economic activity, does it include the Khoyan San communities, or does it include other communities? This is a national program which encourages traditional leaders to be involved in the economic development of their communities. So programs such as the identification of heritage sites, promotion of cultural tourism, it cuts across, but we are emphasizing the Khoyan San, as the honorable member there has indicated earlier, that these are communities that have not been recognized in terms of the Framework Act and all that. So there is that emphasis to make sure that as we embark on all these problems, we do not leave these communities out as it was done during apartheid, because the exclusion comes from apartheid. And because, as you know, that the new constitution in terms of traditional leadership recognized that which was recognized during apartheid, and which meant that those who were excluded then continued to be excluded in terms of Chapter 12 of the Constitution. The cultural tourism, or LED, members would remember during the opening of the House of Traditional Leaders, the President emphasized the programs which should take traditional leadership to be at the center of local economic development. And he emphasized the programs like cultural tourism, where heritage sites, where the people fought previously, where their elders are buried and all that, should be identified, protected and preserved, so that we encourage people to come in and visit those sites, and in that way learn the history of our people. And it is within that context that the department is taking up this program, as directed and instructed by the President during the opening of the House, to ensure that wherever possible there will be those programs that promote cultural tourism through the preservation of the heritage site and their protection. And anyway, as I said earlier, the Framework Act enjoins traditional leaders to be involved in economic development initiatives of their communities. The communication on the claims that have been resolved, this is being communicated immediately the claim or dispute is resolved, and we hope that the message does reach the affected communities. I'll take it up to here.